McCree is upon recovering from back surgery, so he will not be participating in the arguments. But he has read the briefs, he will listen to the arguments on tape, and he will be participating in deliberations and decisions. First case, 98-2439, Jane Tricker versus John Deere and Aaron.
Sets up one of those barriers.
Absolutely, without doubt.
On the issue of direct or implied discrimination?
I don't think Burns sets a standard beyond the causal requirements that I might have described in that case. And I think the three-judge plurality decision of Burns should be expressly overruled in this case. That decision is construed by the various courts of appeals since it was enacted has emasculated the enforcement of discrimination laws in Ohio. It's been broadly interpreted by the Franklin County Board of Appeals and other courts of appeals to require proof direct in time and circumstance to the particular plan of discriminatory statements and actions by employers. The effect of that is that even relevant evidence from a prior period of time, such as that presented in this case, like in the summary judgment process, is excluded from the termination by the trial court. That exclusion is wrong. Even the U.S. Supreme Court, each time that it's considered an age discrimination case, and as conservative as that court has gotten in recent years, has always ruled in favor of wide liberal enforcement of discrimination laws. Every age discrimination case ever before the U.S. Supreme Court has resulted in a decision in favor of the plan, in favor of expansion, not in favor of contraction.
Mr. Kemp, you say even relevant evidence is excluded, and yet isn't relevance the very basis for deciding that certain, I guess in the Burns case, that certain statements by someone in management that were distant in time or unrelated to the particular person and you couldn't tie it together, it was a relevance problem.
The issue with Burns, and there were 14 age derogatory statements by the chairman of the company, Burns, who was involved. And I understand the difficulty of Burns because of the size of the verdict we were able to get from the jury in the case. And more than $7 million verdict presents the issue before this court.
That really shouldn't be an issue.
Well, the difficulty in Burns that this court addressed in the plurality decision wasn't a difficulty at all. The fact is the person in that case, Larry McLaren, pushing to discharge the president, the executive vice president's company, was pushing based on a number of factors, but he had made in the past 14 age derogatory comments about people around him. Is the age bias of the chairman of the company, who plays part in the decision-making process, relevant to determination, whether it's age discrimination? And if the answer is absolutely.
Well,
and why isn't it?
Yeah. But your case is, you know, you're talking about Burns saying Burns sets up an impossible test, but your case seems to turn on, at least the Court of Appeals seemed to say that there was no response, no issue of material fact to the position that your client was discharged. There were non-discriminatory reasons for the choice to discharge.
Yeah, the affidavits contest each of those reasons.
Yeah.
The reasons that he was discharged supposedly was he went to his largest client, which he initiated for the court company, because he was called by that client after he had been terminated by a supervisor. And he told that client that John Erickson's an angel. When you look at Bob Gray's affidavit on summary judgment, he says in 1983 and 1984, we were an angel company. He also says I was terminated. When you look at the affidavit, he said my boss, Jim Kazawa, terminated me. Part of that meeting. If you look at the affidavits, it says, in fact, that John Deere Insurance Company was being sold. Well, in September of this year, John Deere Insurance Company sold to Century Insurance. There wasn't a single factor that he said Mr. Williams was wrong.
Now, there's the debate. Yeah.
On summary judgment, it's up to the trial court or the court of appeals to weigh that evidence and make a determination. That's why we have juries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this case, and what's interesting in the firm context in this case is John Deere Insurance Company got a new vice president in charge of the sales operation in 1993. And he said, we got too many old guys out in the field, and I'm going to change that. Now, Larry McClendon in Burns said, we got too many, we got to get rid of some of these older workers. I don't like the age problem that we have on the workforce. There were a number of 14 different instances, very sensitive. What did they do with John Deere Insurance? They went about the next 3 years and systematically eliminated 50 salesmen over age 40. 50. And my guy was one of them. He'd been there almost 20 years. Now, can you say, Justice Cook, that when Rex Lyons says, we got too many old salesmen out there, when you find evidence that the company's not marketable and they're trying to sell it, there's too many older workers in it, and then you see them systematically eliminating 50 people over age 40, can you say that evidence isn't probative?
Your client can make allegations of age discrimination. And then the burden was upon the employer to show that the discharge was non-discriminatory.
Correct.
Is it possible in a summary judgment then for your client to respond to those non-discriminatory allegations? Or would every age discrimination be an actual trial?
No. We did respond to those non-discriminatory allegations and refuted them. In fact, now it's up to the trial court at that point to say there's a genuine dispute as to the material fact as to whether this discharge was for just cause. In fact, you look at some of the language, the 4112.17 talks about just that the discharge other than for just cause. So the court don't focus on that. But there is a shifting that happens at that point, Mr. President, and it goes back to what's the motivating factor, discriminatory, or was it the basis that the employer set, or was what the employer did to protect?
Well, what I'm concerned about is these discrimination cases that would appear to be that because of the trial court and court appeals not weigh the evidence some of the judgment,
clearly
not as such, what I'm concerned about is that it would appear that almost in all the age discrimination cases that some judgments would not be proper because it would always be a material question of fact.
In fact, I think you'll find, Justice Resnick, that in most age discrimination cases, there's no direct evidence of age. That you look at the circumstances of the discharge and you try to decide, was it really the reason stated, or was it because of guys? If you use McDonald-Douglas versus Green, you just first, you come back to that old issue. In this case, there was a pervasive evidence of age. From the supervisor directly above, from the supervisor two levels above, and from the actions taken as to all of the salesmen as a whole during the period, there was overwhelming evidence of discrimination. In this case.
What are the standards? So the standards that were applied to your client, they were applied to all the salesmen, regardless of their age.
And they had a disproportionate effect on older salesmen. Yes. Now, can an employer do that? Can they employ what appeared to be objectively non-discriminatory standards that have the effect of eliminating a certain class of employees? What was the purpose of that? Is to eliminate that class? It's wrong. In this case, the salesman would sell customers, and Denver had, you know, over a $2 million base of customers he had to service. He then had to go out, just like a first-year salesman, and make 48 presentations all of them.
Well, if a company decides, it looks at their bottom line, they decide, we're not getting enough production from our sales force, our sales person, and so they decide to raise the bar, so to speak, which required all salespersons to work harder or perhaps work differently than they've been working. Is that the basis for it?
Nothing wrong with that, sure.
But in that's context, what happened here. You know.
That did not happen here. In fact, the affidavits contradict that. They say that Mr. Ricker, they enforced the sales presentation requirement, but it was either reported to submit an affidavit. He didn't need them either, but they didn't discharge him. So we created a factual issue on even that specific point. Chief Justice, we need you on board on this case. We need the Chief Justice of this state.
Don't appeal to me that way, please. I'll be on board if I agree with the law.
I agree, and we want you to enforce the health and support.
You can do it without me.
How do you respond to the fact that this individual was not replaced by someone outside the class? He was replaced by a 58-year-old.
Well, they came in and tried to replace him with three people that were young.
I understand that, but still, he was replaced by a 58-year-old.
Yeah, it's interesting that when he was discharged, first his boss, who was under 40, took over and said he coveted that territory. That's in the affidavit. And then they tried to get three younger people, two of their 31, that was 22 or 23, to take over this territory. None would take it because they thought Jim Ricker would be back out competing with them with another church, and they didn't think they could sell it. So after we filed a lawsuit, then they found 58-year-old to take the job. So after factually.
So it was after we filed the lawsuit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And every employer, once a lawsuit is filed, could eliminate McDonald Douglas versus Grimace, simply hiring, getting rid of whoever they replaced them with initially, and hiring only someone over the age of the person who is discharged. There's lots of older workers out there looking for jobs that would love to have.
Isn't that the distinction between this case and Burns?
An attempt to replace by a younger person? No, in fact, Your Honor, there was evidence in Burns that there was a younger person targeted that was in his 30s.
Well, but in Burns, the discharged person wasn't replaced at all.
Well, that's what happened ultimately, but like this case, when Burns was initially discharged, Larry McClurnan's idea was to replace him by a guy named Paul Kinley, who was in his 30s, who was substantially younger than Burns, but the board would go along with it. So the discriminatory motive was kind of making decisions, in fact, and Burns went forward. But this case is factually different than Burns. We satisfy Burns in this case, but Burns is an impediment to the effective enforcement of these laws. In this state, it needs to be changed.
On the other issue, not on that issue, not on that fourth prong.
On the replacement by a younger person, no. Although there are a lot of lower court decisions that don't subscribe to the U.S. Supreme Court decision of O'Connor, the replacement by someone younger has to mean someone, and not necessarily under 40, but someone substantially younger than the plaintiff. Justice Resnick, in the Mousy footnote on O'Connor being the law of the state, the lower courts have no intention. And have consistently not adopted O'Connor as the rule of law. The over 40, under 40, substantially younger doesn't apply in this case because that doesn't happen.
The non-discriminatory reason given by John Deere was disloyalty.
Was lack of loyalty?
Disloyalty. That's the way the Court of Appeals framed it in their opinion. And it's, you know, we're selling our business, truthful. You know, as you say, well, they sold their business. These may have well been truthful statements, but I read the Court of Appeals opinion as turning on not Byrne, not, you know, all of the issues that are stirring you about the general law in this area. I understand. But this Court of Appeals seems to turn on the failure to dispute the non-discriminatory reason of disloyalty. If an employee goes to one of your good customers and says, hey, my company's selling its business, it's the two things they say, John Deere was selling its business and it was approached by a potential buyer. They seem to say just that was, then that shook up the customer.
You have to look at the evidence that was presented by affidavit. The affidavits from my client and from other people said that he was fired before that meeting ever took place. So you can't fire someone after they're fired. Okay? That's first issue.
Second issue, when he was asked, he didn't volunteer these things, he was asked, is the company, has the company been financial trouble? He answered honestly. He asked, is the company up for sale? He answered honestly.
Well, yeah, if he'd already been, I mean...
How is that just what?
It's the evidence, the Court of Appeals says the evidence in this record that thus does not establish a genuine issue of fact concerning the accuracy, which is the whole point on the non-discriminatory reason, the accuracy of John Deere's explanation for terminating plaintiff. So the court missed the boat on assessing the affidavit as it conflicted with the deposition, and I realize in your brief you said it, if you go to the next line, it really doesn't conflict with the deposition?
Right.
Okay.
Right. I think if you look at the affidavits and you look at the conflicting evidence, that there's no issue there for decision of the employer. And you have to weigh the evidence from that conclusion. You just can't.
Yeah, they don't, they don't seem to go, at least they don't believe.
They ignore the evidence and claim that he was just part of that meeting. They ignore it.
Okay. You know, because they don't say they were weighing. The Court of Appeals doesn't take that.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn.
But he also gave us some other direct evidence, didn't he? If he gave an affidavit that said, I was fired after that meeting. I'm sorry, before that meeting. Now we've got both these direct pieces of direct evidence.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. It seems as though Mr. Ricker has attempted to create an issue of fact by contradicting his sworn deposition testimony. But if you look carefully at that deposition, the exhibits to that deposition, what it shows is that John Deere bent over backwards to make this work with Mr. Ricker. There's a memo dated March 19th.
But Mr. Dunn, let's just take the scenario and not the scenario of the, in any case, where you have a deposition that is later contradicted by, for summary judgment purposes, by an affidavit. Have you researched the law on what a court's to do with that?
Yes, we provide a footnote in our brief, I believe on page 4. It is in there. There are several cases, but the most recent is the Court of Appeals case, Stare v. Phoenix Systems, I believe. It talks about you can't create that issue of fact by contradicting your sworn deposition testimony. And this was the case here. The affidavits, it's important to read those affidavits because the Court of Appeals had it right. And that is, the merits in that affidavit recite basically the allegations in the complaint verbatim. And what the problem is, Burns is not the problem. Burns is consistent with Rossi, it's consistent with Comesher, it's consistent with Petrillo. The problem is Mr. Ricker cannot provide sufficient evidence to make out a prima facie case, either under the direct method, under Mossy, or under the indirect method. And the problem is he's presented certain statements, alleged statements, that were not made by the individual who fired him. It's important to remember Bob Gray fired Jim Ricker, not Jim Kurzawa. Bob Gray made that decision. After writing him a memo on March 19th saying, we're really hopeful that this is going to work out with you, Jim, and we're here to help you make it. All of a sudden, 3 weeks later, Mr. Gray is supposed to have been overcome with age animus and terminated Mr. Ricker. No. Here's the memo on April 9th, 4 days after the meeting with W.W. Williams, from Bob Bray to Jim Hooker, saying, and that's, these are exhibits W.W. and U.U. in his deposition, saying, we think you're on board. They didn't even know about the meeting with Williams yet. They found out on the 11th and fired him on the 12th. But going back to Burns, the statements are remote in time. They're not made by Bob Bray. They're made by Rex Klein in 2 years before the termination. This gentleman, Mr. Rickard, had been on probation for 2 years before performance. He admits in his deposition on page 158 and on page 212 that these standards that increase productivity apply to everyone across the board. He admitted that very clearly. Then, so the evidence under Burns, the sufficiency of the evidence isn't even sufficient to make out the prima facie case. But stop and then think under the indirect method. Is he made out a case because he can't make out a case under the direct method? Can he do it under the indirect? No, for two reasons. One, he wasn't qualified for the job. You can see that in the record. The exhibits to his deposition with his performance appraisals and his review are that thick of the problems that they had with Jim Rickard. Second of all, he was replaced by a 58-year-old. It's true that there is an allegation that they interviewed people under 40, but I assume John Deere wants to be competitive in the industry, and they're going to interview anybody and everybody that might be able to fill a job or a position.
Well, didn't that replacement take place after the lawsuit was filed?
I think ultimately it did, Ron.
Well, isn't that important?
Well, I don't really think so. Here's why.
That almost means that you can correct what you've done if somebody sues you by going out and doing something else in order to get rid of that test.
Well, if you can show
that didn't happen in Mousy. It did happen in Burns. I disagree with Mr. Callum. I think that was an important issue. That's what I decided Mousy on.
Two things, sir, Justice Douglas. One of the things, you're right, we did decide Burns on that case, but the fourth prong was not. And the fourth prong has always been an integral part. Otherwise, it just makes the wrongful discharge case.
Yep.
Here we have, take a look at Burns. The majority of this court agrees that there should be a causal link or a nexus. And in Burns, there were statements like, does this plan have Alzheimer's? We want young sprinters, not old men. There's nothing like that in this record. But going back to the indirect, you're right, there are certain statements you could contextually go and hire somebody, I guess, but the record doesn't reflect any of that. It's important to bear in mind there were no depositions done by the plaintiff in this case. There were no minimal written discovery. And there's in his brief on pages 2 and 5, when he says there was a systematic plan to terminate people over age 40, there's no citation of the record. There can't be, because it's impossible. He never backed it up with sufficient statistical evidence. But even stepping back and saying that the Court of Appeals did, and the Court of Appeals, in John Deere's opinion, had wrong, because the fourth prong was not satisfied, but even assuming that the prima facie case was made, the Court of Appeals ultimately decided it, because then you have to step back, let the presumptions go away, and look at the evidence, and has the plaintiff ultimately, what the ultimate question of Ozzy was, has he raised a genuine issue of fact that he was terminated for discrimination? He never rebutted the reason John Deere got the immunity.
That's what that's why I was raising with Mr. Kelm, is that the Court of Appeals said the accuracy of that non-discriminatory reason was not challenged with, and that's why I asked you about that, where you have conflicting evidence from a deposition and an affidavit. Nobody cited to us the case of Turner v. Turner. The syllabus says when a litigant's affidavit in support of his or her motion for summary judgment is inconsistent with his or her earlier deposition testimony, summary judgment in that party's favor is improper because there exists a question of credibility which can be resolved only by the trier of fact. You know that Turner case? How is that not important here?
Well, it may very well be important. And the problem is, though, the genuine issue of fact is being created by the plaintiff. In his deposition, in his sworn testimony, he says one thing, and then, when faced with a motion for summary judgment, prepares an affidavit. Essentially, Justice Resnick had a point. Why not just let every one of these cases go to a jury? Why not? A verified complaint with an affidavit, and you're going. That's the problem here. John Deere, 2 days, took Mr. Rickard's deposition. He admitted all the standards applied to everything, 50, 40, 30, or And he admitted quite candidly, yes, I wrote that letter to Bill Williams. And in that letter, he states, I was terminated on the spot for meeting with you and what you said to John Deere, because he was concerned about John Deere. And that's the reason he was terminated. Now, in the 11th hour, again, the independent, stepping back from that and looking at the exhibits of that deposition, the memo from Bob Gray to Jim Recker on April 9th shows Jim Recker was an employee of John Deere. He was fired on April 12th, and the letter's terminated. And in his deposition, you know what he said when asked about being terminated before the meeting? Well, we all knew I was going to be terminated. I knew it was coming. That's what he said. He files an affidavit trying to create a genuine issue of fact. That cannot be what the sanction.
But, I mean, if the affidavit is sworn and it's a flat-out, as you say now, arguably a flat-out lie, but it's sworn, Turner says, we're going to figure that out at trial.
Well, if that should not be the law, frankly.
I don't love the case either.
Every plaintiff can go to a jury trial, and summary judgment is so important. It's important to a plaintiff. It's important to a defendant. It's a good dispute resolution mechanism. It sorts out those cases that have merit and those cases that do not. This case does not have merit. And plus, it's...
Oh, wait a minute. Have you ever seen a summary judgment in one of these cases for a plaintiff?
No, Your Honor.
Me either.
Not having a call, but you know, quite frankly, it wouldn't happen in this case. Believe me, the record in this case, there are no genuine issues. In fact, Mr. Ricker even admits, but the problem is you've got individual employees in the corporation that are defendants, like Jim Crisol, who for 3 years has had to live with this. It's not firms that causes the problem for Mr. Ricker.
I wanted to ask you that again to be sure I understand, because I thought it that Mousy and Burns were really compatible, are they?
They very much so are. And that is what Mr. Ricker does not want to acknowledge. Mousy is good law, and Burns is good law. Mousy simply states the truism that evidence is any kind of suspicion to prove that the employer, the defendant, was motivated by discriminatory animus. But what Burns does is say, what about the sufficiency of the evidence? There has to be a link or a nexus. And that is what is glaringly absent here. There is no link or nexus. We talk about 50 employees systematically on. Again, there's no citation. There was no statistical evidence that would tie in employees leaving other than for ordinary retirement, maybe buyout packages, maybe they weren't performing. And no one, nothing to bring those cold numbers, if they even were true, to light. It just doesn't exist in this case. And if you look at this court's precedent, Comish, Control, Law, you have evidence that gives rise to a natural inference of discrimination, or that fairly and reasonably warrants a finding of inference of discrimination, as the Attorney General said on behalf of the OCRC. There's different ways of saying it, but in Comish, when an employee is let go because he's in the retirement window, that's on his face. Got a problem based on age. In Petrillo, when the employee is let go because he doesn't get hard assignments, and he doesn't get hard assignments because he's going to retire, that is age related right off the bat. Look at the United States Supreme Court, Price Waterhouse, a gender case. The candidate for partnership wasn't feminine, was it was too masculine. That's a problem. We don't have anything like that here. What we have are alleged statements made 2 years before by someone who ultimately didn't even fire Mr. Ricker. Terms is not the problem, Your Honor. The problem is that Mr. Ricker can't get over what it requires. And it's a sensible, ordered way to handle age discrimination. Because, Dan, I would point to the fact that the Chamber of Commerce is brief. If you look at what Burns has done, 10 cases, relying on Burns, six of them have been ruled in favor of the defendants, four in favor of denying summary judgment. Not overwhelmingly stifling to the plaintiff's case. They don't think that's actually accurate enough, so I want to
issue that the case is not true. The record is 50 former employees of the party that was in an affidavit.
That's correct. Well, it was, when asked for Mr. Rickard's press, I think you'll find the deposition, there's no backup for any of that. Again, if you say 50 employees over 40, there's plenty of work.
My question is, they took the bold out allegation out of there.
Where there were two affidavits, one by Craig and Jim Grisado, both saying that Jim Rickard was terminated because of his age. I can't recall, and I'm not exactly sure, but there is an allegation saying he said the employee, there were not 50 employees let go, and they were let go for this reason, that reason, and that reason.
But the only reason I raise it is that you seem to stress it's real important that this was some unsubstantiated allegation. We had the opportunity, your company had the opportunity to respond to the opportunity to do that. Right? That they did not.
Well, if the allegations out there, it may very well be true, but what does it mean? I mean, it doesn't, if 50 people over 40 leave, 50 out of how many? For what reason? I mean.
And isn't it your interpretation under Burns that that really is irrelevant, since there's no nexus between Rickard? That's where I see the difference between Mounsey and Burns. Mounsey felt that that was relevant evidence when even though it pertains to other individuals and even on the time different. Burns said no, there has to be a nexus between the evidence and the individual who is being discharged based upon age discrimination.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I think you...
So there is a conflict between...
Well, even Your Honor, and Justice Resnick, you agree that a link or nexus requirement is good in a proper case. In the United States Supreme Court, if you look at Pricewaterhouse, all the justices said that. Those straight remarks aren't enough, and that's what you had. You had that burn, you certainly had it here, frankly, because you had some statements there that really were quite pointed as to AGMs, and you don't have anything for that here. So I don't see Burns and Mosse in conflict. I see one is because the Attorney General said on behalf of the CRC, and what we have said and other courts have said, it kind of elaborates on the sufficiency of the evidence and when what type of evidence would be sufficient under Mosse. I think I've used up my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Mr. Kelly, if you use your time, it's going to take 3 seconds.
Right in summary judgment issues in bias cases. In the Swingham versus Ameritech case pending before you, as to which review has not yet been accepted, presents the opportunity to get it right on the trial of age discrimination cases. The same issues presented in that Ameritech case have been accepted for review by the U.S. Supreme Court in Reese versus Sanders and Fleming in November. That's one evidence that's admissible in the trial of age discrimination cases. Judge discrimination against Ohio's longtime workers because of their age. Persistent, pervasive, and invidious. We need trial lawyer tools to stop it. Give them back to us.
Thank you. The case is submitted. We'll be advised of our opinion.